This is Wendy Halley, and you're listening to Lucid Cafe. Welcome to episode 13. I have a couple of announcements before we get to today's guest. Wanted to let you know that I spoke with Mother Nature, and she's decided that summer will begin in mid-July and last only 2 weeks this year. It seems that we here in Vermont have slipped into Westeros and are caught in the Game of Thrones world where winter lasts for decades. Except, thankfully, we have podcasts, and the gang at Winterfell doesn't. So there's that. Speaking of which, someone recently told me that I should use my podcast to promote stuff, specifically my stuff. I said to this person, "Now that's just crazy talk." Those of you who know me know I'm an excellent self-promoter. And those people also know that I'm a smartass. And that the last statement is an example of me being a smartass. So I said to this person, "Do you really think people are interested in hearing me suggest, for example, that they should check out the audiobook version of my book, Slaying the Mouse? I don't know if they'd be interested." I mean, if you're the kind of person who'd be interested in hearing yours truly narrate the true story of a smartass shamanic practitioner, that would be me, recount the experience of her 9-month dreamtime connection with Jason, a 19-year-old man who mysteriously slips into a deep coma, and how you get this intimate view into what this place between life and death is like, and how, with the help of a cast of powerful otherworldly characters, Jason begins to make sense of his experience and heal, well then yes, maybe it would make sense to do an ad. And if I were to do an ad, I'd have to tell you that Slaying the Mouse, A True Story of Healing in the Spiritual Realms, is available pretty much anywhere you get audiobooks, on Audible, iTunes, and Google Play. So the question remains, to do an ad or not to do an ad? I just don't know. On with the show. My guest, Lori Morrison, referred to herself in our conversation as a normal human being, until she found herself suddenly immersed in the non-ordinary world of the shaman about 8 years ago, communicating with Mayan spirits. She captured her amazing experience in her memoir, The Disintegration of My Ordinary Reality. Lori gives us a taste of these experiences at the end of our conversation, but first, we talk about Lori's new book, The Shaman's Guide to Power Animals. It's a beautiful book that gives readers easy access to working with a whole host of animal spirits for support and guidance. Lori Morrison is a best-selling author, inspirationalist, and mystic. She is part of a rare breed of lightning shamans who've received a spontaneous awakening of shamanic knowledge. Lori first journeyed into the shamanic underworld in 2010, where she found the spiritual realm of power animals. Her teachers were Mayan ancestors who took her through a 2-year initiation with the spirits of 4 jaguar. Her later intimate connection with the spirit of a lion, given to her by a Haitian shaman, has been an extraordinary experience and has greatly enhanced her healing powers. By merging and forming a sacred relationship with animal spirits, she's able to support her clients with insight and change through her cutting-edge shamanic counseling practice in Sedona, Arizona, where she resides. Just want to give you a heads up. The audio on Lori's end is a bit muddy. I'm in the process of transitioning to a different long-distance podcast recording platform. Just want to let you know that I'm aware of the issue. You can still make out what Lori is saying. It's just not ideal. Please enjoy my conversation with Lori Morrison. Thank you for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for inviting me. I'm really glad I get to be with you and all your viewers.
You have just released a book, The Shaman's Guide to Power Animals. I have a longtime shamanic healing practice, and I put your book in my healing room and have referenced it in the post-session review as a resource. It's been really helpful and really cool. And what I love about your book is that it really has a very shamanic approach, in that it's all about the importance of being in relationship with the animals, as opposed to other books on animal symbolism that just talk about the symbolism or the mythology behind the animal. This really seems to emphasize the importance of being in relationship with, which is, of course, a very shamanic concept. Was that your intention?
Yes, I am. My own personal experience involved the merging and working with animals. And so, like you say, I didn't really take the astrological approach of, okay, if I see this, this means that, or, you know, that's kind of a simplistic view. I truly work with them in my practice. I merge with them. They are part of my process as a shamanic practitioner. So I take it, you know, into that deeper form of involvement with them. Also, I was really curious as to what did they mean for all these different cultures, and was there a similarity? In other words, did the Hindus see rabbit as like the Hopis did? Or, you know, what was the, was there any kind of connection between all these cultures as to similarities? Also, the Egyptians, so many were buried with animals. There was one, in my research, I realized that there was several times when Egyptians were buried with their entire herd of donkeys. Why? You know, so it just kept opening more and more doors as to, you know, more and more questions and doors to find answers. And it was quite a journey. And then at the end, the animals kept coming in, working with me. And the first day was kind of fun because I decided to channel them. I thought, well, they have all this to say, I'll just channel and share. And so I thought, well, how do I do this? I guess I'll start alphabetically. So I started with aardvark. And so I walked out of my house on my normal morning walk here in Sedona, and I had aardvark talking to me on my walk. And aardvark ended up being kind of my guide. He was like, I felt a male energy. And he was like, okay, I'm going to take you through the entire animal kingdom, and I'll bring these animals to you. I will help you, you know, interact with them. And we all have lots to say. And so aardvark became kind of my muse, my guide. And like, I would be going through, and aardvark would come in and say, okay, I've got, you know, I've got Hawk here, and, you know, here's what Hawk has to say. So he was kind of my muse, my, and very much involved in the process and very excited about the process, mostly because this is information we can share with humanity. And it's kind of gave them a voice from their spiritual perspective.
So what prompted you to even start this process?
Well, my agent in New York, he's very clever, very successful author, New York Times bestselling author. He wrote The Book of Birthdays, which is probably the most best-selling book in the New Age community. And he asked me one time, he said, you know, what is this power animal thing? And my first book is called The Disintegration of My Ordinary Reality, which was my memoir. And on the cover, he helped me design the cover as a picture of the eye of a jaguar, because the process involved four jaguars. So he became very curious about it. And then one day he said, well, you know, what's my power animal? You know, what's all this about? So I explained it to him. He got really enthused about the whole process. He received his power animal. He was just delighted. It was so perfectly for him. And he realized, wow, there's something so exciting and fun about this, that the people, if they just had the opportunity to, you know, kind of tap into this practice, that they could really enhance their lives by bringing these animals in. So he encouraged me to write the book. And I didn't really know where it was going in the beginning. I thought, well, okay, I'm going to write a book about animals. I'm just going to tell people about them. But then when the aardvark showed up, it just changed kind of the path. And then I realized that it was just going to be going through animal by animal and researching, and then also channeling it. You know? And that's the little, that's the difference, I think, that brings that richness to the book, because there's the true channeled messages from the animals in that. And that's sometimes was very surprising.
Yeah. So what would you say was there anything that was incredibly surprising to you in this process, what you learned from an animal that stands out in your mind?
Well, overall, what really impressed me was the amount of years they've been here. Millions and millions of years these species have been on Earth. And so that was my first kind of eye-opener to say, wow, you know, our existence is so small on this planet. There's just so much knowledge, because this ancestral knowledge that comes down, you know, generation after generation through the animal kingdom. I mean, hello, we can't even compare our knowledge of the Earth, and especially just the evolution of the Earth. There's no way we can even compare our knowledge to theirs. So that was one big shocking thing, I guess, because I was like, I'm talking to beings that they get it. They've been through the transitions of our planet. You know, they see the world through such a different lens than we do. And, you know, isn't that interesting to have a perspective of something else? I mean, you know, we all have different beliefs and opinions and things like that, but this is just out of the human form, you know, jumping out of the human form and saying, what's it like to be here? And jumping into another form of an animal and seeing it from their perspective. So that to me was surprising. And then probably the most profound experience I had was with whale. I got pulled in to the ocean, and I was swimming with a whale pod because they said to me, you can't tell you, you have to show you. And so I ended up there. I almost brought tears to my eyes again, because I could see the world from their point of view. I could see the family setting. I could see how they interact with each other. They all had messages for me, and I was completely emotionally, completely overtaken by that experience. It was very hard to write about, because I saw the ocean through their eyes, you know, what we've been doing to our planet, and it was very startling. It was very, I was very overwhelmed by it. So that was a really extraordinary experience. I also was kind of, was like, can I do this? You know, can I channel 185 or 90 animals? You know, I had channeled a lot of things, but not to that extent. And so I was pretty blown away by just the thought of doing that. I thought, you know, well, that's a lot of channeling. But after I got started, it became easier and easier. They were so generous when they would come in. They were so careful with my form, with my human form, to receive that information. There was just a gentleness and a supportive environment from all of them that came in. And also just the gratitude, really, that, you know, that someone would actually stop their life and dedicate so much time to bringing all these messages through.
Very powerful. I imagine that this process, it sounds like you've kind of already hinted at this, but I imagine it was kind of transformative in getting all these different perspectives, and it sounds like you merged with the animals.
Many times I would merge. Sometimes they were not as familiar with the process and weren't quite sure how it worked with me. So it was a learning curve for all of us. The ostrich was one that was, ostrich came in and ostrich did not want to leave. Ostrich was very excited being in a human body. So I had ostrich.
Fascinating, yeah.
Around with me for about 2 or 3 days. And I was trying to ask ostrich that I got it, you can move on.
So, did you find you wanted to pick bugs off of windows?
Yeah, it was some. There were some interesting experiences when they did try to merge. You know, I'm used to merging because I use a power animal in my practice. I use a lion, and she's. I do medical intuition work, and she. I use her eyes to see into the human body. So I'm used to that. You know, that someone, you know, another spirit's eyes coming into me. But each one had a different characteristic, and so it wasn't just the eyes. It was, you know, that some of them showed me how they hunt. They wanted me to see that. Some of them showed me their perception of humanity, which, you know, a lot of times we wonder, what are they thinking about us? You know? And some showed that. Octopus was very interesting. Octopus, very cosmic. Octopus taught, really wasn't interested in teaching me about Earth, very interested in the cosmic world. There's a lineage of them from there, and all I wanted to talk about was planetary, you know, information and cosmic, you know, connections and things like that. So they were, you know, Octopus was completely off into his cosmic land world, and I found out they are aliens. They're not really from here, the aliens. And, you know, each one was Spider was fascinating, very powerful animal, very much about our time, you know, weaving webs, you know, the World Wide Web, that's what we call it. Very much about that and the precision of it and the importance of bringing people to us through, you know, that connection. Internet.
Well, your process is really interesting. I'm curious because in reviewing your book, I saw some mythological animals like the unicorn and the dragon. How did they come into play?
Yes, I got a message one day, but I wasn't sure about them. I thought, well, do I include them or not? But I remember I was in a drum circle, a very important drum circle one time, and it was a shaman with me, and his, and when we would do journey work, his biggest ally was dragon, and dragon was everywhere with him. He went all over with him, and he was an amazing healer with dragon. And I thought, well, why would I leave it out? It's, you know, so many shamans use mythical figures, you know, and animals. So I got a message from Unicorn. That came in and said, I think it's in the book, like, only through your, you know, because you're so shut down, you can't see us, so it's, but we exist. You know, so to say, well, I'm not going to do that because they don't exist, well, they don't exist because we can't see them, but they do. So I didn't feel like I should treat them any differently.
Right. I just think of tapping into the lower worlds.
Yeah,
accessing these archetypal mythological animal friends who are there to be of service to us. And that's, I guess, based on what you were describing, it sounded like you were connecting with a lot of middle world, mostly middle world animals who've lived on the planet. And
Correct.
Then they're, yeah.
And then they were also just, you know, there was some, I had a really interesting experience, probably the most unique my experience, because I was researching the Tasmanian devil that lived on Tasmania. A lot of them get bad raps, by the way. They weren't too thrilled with Disney.
I could see that, yeah.
There was somewhere, depending on which side of the perspective they fell on. But with the Tasmanian devil, we did a lot of research trying to find, you know, what it meant for indigenous communities in Tasmania. But since Tasmania was just pretty much wiped out, you know, as soon as the settlers came in there, colonialism, they just wiped out everybody. And so I couldn't find a lot of information. And I was frustrated, and, you know, like, where do I go to find out what the, you know, the people on Tasmania thought of the Tasmanian devil? And then a voice came in and said, you can talk to me. And it was a shaman from Tasmania. A woman shaman who had died. And I looked her up online and I found her name. And she said, I'll tell you all about the Tasmanian devil. So It was very interesting because that particular atom in the book is a channeling of a channeling.
Yeah.
I channeled her, and then she told me what they felt. It was interesting. When I ran out of research or couldn't get what I needed, oftentimes I would go to a shaman at that time who would come in and then channel the information, how they used them.
That's a very creative solution.
It was very creative. And the Tasmanian devil was very happy about that because he felt that even more, it was more authentic because it came that way.
Yeah, makes sense. I was just thinking about animals that get a bad rap. Like if the snake shows up in a healing session, people can feel a little repulsed or fearful when the snake shows up, and trying to educate folks around the gifts that each animal brings. And that, I don't know how you look at this, but when I'm working with folks and an animal that shows up that they have no connection with whatsoever, they've never felt a connection with that animal. My take is usually that, well, that animal's wanting to bring you into new territory in your growth. Is that how you kind of see these things too?
Yes, I do offer a service. People will call and ask to be other animal identified. And sometimes they'll say, well, I don't relate to that animal. And check again. And every time I check again, it's the same animal. So I encourage people not to ask me twice because the discovery is theirs. It's your discovery to find out it. If a tarantula shows up, you might say, oh, well, a tarantula is not, that's unlike spiders. Well, there's some surprising information from tarantula. And it's your job to find out why tarantula wants to interact with you, because it's never random. It's always, there's always meaning behind it. So, like you say, the best thing is to find out why that animal is there, not ignore that. It's valuable information.
Yeah, I think it's cool when an animal that's surprising shows up for someone, because then it's kind of almost validates that they're not making things up in a way, that they are tapping into the dream time.
Right.
Because they never would have invited that particular animal into their lives.
Yeah. And then other times, like, for example, I had someone come in and ask for their animal, and it was sparrow. And she wrote me back and sent me a picture of her tattoos. She was covered with sparrows. But she never knew why. And that's the thing, is we do these things on a subtle level. We're attracted to it, or we're pulled into it. But we don't have that knowledge that's real. And so a lot of times people enjoy getting the validation, and then it's like, okay, now I understand. This animal's been with me through my journey, and that's why I have this connection. Another client said, I brought back a cougar for her, and she said that she had a friend of hers, maybe 10 years ago, insist that she take this painting of a cougar. And she was like, well, okay, what is it? And she took a picture, and she said she hung it over her bed, and it's been hanging over her bed for 10 years. But she didn't. So I always felt connected to it, but I didn't really understand. And that validation just changed everything. So she has this, much more budding relationship now with Cooper, and why Cooper is in her life. Just kind of moving past that initial reaction to it. And then saying, oh, wow. And then with the book, it's great because you can go in and say, okay, what is Cooper all about? And, what kind of messages does it bring to me? And then it helps you focus on your own kind of self-evaluation.
In your book, you don't just write about the animal, but you have each animal broken into categories, or you have different, how would you describe it, topics?
Powers.
Different powers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I just opened up here to randomly to the bobcat. So you list the powers that the bobcat shared with you,
right,
that the animal will share with, I guess, the human who they're connected to.
Mm-hmm.
And then the awareness from the bobcat explaining why that animal might be showing up at this particular time in your life.
Right.
And then you go into a little bit different territory. You talk about the energy center, the mineral associated with the animal, and the element. So can you talk a little bit about how that came to be, the energy center and the mineral and the element?
Well, I felt that, sometimes the animals would mention that, so I included it directly from them. But I also felt that it might be nice to have a physical thing. I didn't want people going out, honestly, and buying bobcat tails and things. I was very, very cautious back in the book. I do not mention that part of the shamanistic practice that happens sometimes, because I don't believe in going and buying a jaguar head in Peru or something like that.
That's a possibility? You can do that?
Yeah, I found a lot of things online where people buy part.
Oh, my.
And so my book, I did not want to have any of that encouraged as a shamanic practice. I didn't want everyone who's a shaman in the United States saying, oh, well, let me go buy rabbit foot or things like that because I'm good. So I thought it would be nice if I could have something that would be on the same frequency as that animal, that the people could use as a token to their animal, or they could use it on an altar if they're building an altar towards their power animal, without going and buying a body part. So I wanted to include that because it was just an alternative, and it's so fascinating how as I've been digging deeper into each animal, because I myself am using the book. It's kind of like I ran through the channeling, and now I'm going back and reading my own book again. I'm like, this is really good stuff. I'm using it. But I was pretty amazed at how well the minerals lined up with them. And in animism, it's all about the plants, the minerals, and the creatures. And so it's all a frequency based science, or philosophy. So I knew it was possible to actually do that. And it's actually worked out fairly, fairly interesting. And I think that when you look at if you look at a crystal guide and you see what that crystal means, and then you relate it to the power animal, you'll see a lot of alignment.
How do you want readers to use this book?
Well, we have several different types of power animals. And this is where people get a little confused sometimes about how that works. I have found through the research I've done is there is a energy in an animal that is kind of like your theme animal. So in other words, the one that you kind of come in with. And indigenous cultures knew this. There's an animal that comes in with you at birth, and this animal tends to kind of create the theme or the archetype, maybe. And again, they know this, and so when it's revealed, and then that's why you see in indigenous cultures where you see people merging with animals, the Pachina dolls, like you see in Arizona, where people represent that animal because it's kind of their worldly power that they come into Earth with. So there's kind of that theme animal. And then there's when animals present themselves to you. And that's another time to say, okay, maybe I need to pay attention to what that means. So you can use the book for that moment when an animal comes. In fact, I had a person yesterday, I presented her with a power animal, and it was a tortoise. And she sent me immediately a video, and she said, Lori, this is my picture of this tortoise that came by my house I took yesterday before you gave me my power animal. So she was like, I need to slow down. I need to chill. I'm just going way too fast. And so, those little messages can come in that way. Also, there are, times where you may just, find yourself in a difficult situation. Like, for example, I tell my story about how I use the mouse to find a house, but it's hard to find a home, rentals sometimes. And so I was looking for a place, and I thought, well, okay, I'll just grab mouse and, we'll go out. And sure enough, I found a house like that, the perfect place. So I use their powers when I need something. So going to the book and, you know, finding what powers in the back, you can check the different powers. You can say, well, I might, you know, need this work. I need to have some endurance. Going on a long trip, might be nice to have albatross along. You know, it might be, you know, I'm living alone. I need to, I'm struggling with, you know, being alone. And leopard is a very solitary creature. So maybe it's time to call in leopard and ask, you know, how can this be? How can I enhance my life with that? So you can use it in those ways. I think it's just also an interesting concept because we talk in the spiritual community about calling in our guides or our spirits, but this is kind of like having a whole animal kingdom available to you beyond just your own guides and spirits where you can use their powers. It's not just the power of that one particular spirit that you work with. I have found many times in difficult situations where I won't be using my guides. I'll call in, you know, some of the powers of animals in the book. So, and then a lot of people really like also the shaman's intention. And that's kind of, you know, shamans work with intention. It's so important on the field when you're working. And a lot of times kind of helpful to know, you know, what intention could I place with on the field with this animal? And so that information in the book has been very helpful as well.
Associated with each animal, you have the shaman's intention.
With it, the shaman, you know, can go on a journey with these power animals. That's a lot of times how I do a lot of divination work, is I choose the animal I think would be most helpful to journey with, and then place that intention in the field and go out and have that animal work with me to seek the information that I'm looking for. So that information is also for each animal. In other words, what would be a good intention to place with that animal to go out on the field as you are journeying.
How do you suggest folks connect with power animals, especially folks who may be new to shamanism or never explored shamanism, and they are curious and they would love to have an animal spirit, a connection with one?
Well, I'm working with a new, about 2 years ago, I started working with a very sophisticated space program. It's based on scalar energy. It's kind of like the Tesla of energy determination on the field. And it was designed by some Europeans. And when I started to use it, I realized, wow, I could actually create a footprint of someone based on their birth date, birthplace, and their name, the name that they most, you know, familiarize themselves with. And I could create this holographic field or a position of that person on the field at the time they were born. And then what I did is I took all the animals that I had, and I have their frequencies as well, and I ran those frequencies at that moment against that person's hologram. And then an animal pops up. And so for me, and I asked the question, I placed the intention in the field, what animal was present at the birth of this person? And so with that, the animal comes forward, pops up on the program, and I'm able to tell you what the power animal is.
It's a computer program?
It's a computer program, but it works on scalar energy. So I designed the program. It's available.
Okay. No, you lost me there for a second. Now I think I'm following you.
Yeah, I use it as an extra tool. So in other words, I use my own intention. I use my own feeling. I can see the animal. But then what I'll do to make it quicker, because otherwise, you know, as a shaman practitioner, shamanic practitioner, that could take me half an hour, an hour, you know, to go and really determine that, you know, have to take the journey into the underworld, find the animal, get. So with this, I can do it very quickly and bring it up so it doesn't cost, you know, $200 session with me to figure that out and, you know, do the ceremonial retrieval. So with this, I needed to say, okay, this is the animal, this is the energy of this animal who's present with your energy in that place on that day that
you were when born. You were born. Wow. Okay. So this is something people can connect with you and do.
Yeah, you can go online. You just sign up. you can get that with the book. So you can buy the book and get the power animal with the book. It's the one. I just do the one at your birth. So it's not going to be maybe the animal you're working with now or you know, the animal you saw yesterday. It's kind of the theme animal. It's that animal that's kind of your guide. It's kind of like how the aardvark came into my life and then guided me through the process. It's kind of the role. They take that role, the ones that are born.
That's very cool. And you're saying that with the purchase of the book, that people can access this information?
Well, if you buy the book on my website, we're setting it up right now where we're going to bundle the book with the program, so it should be up pretty soon. But right now, you can buy the book and then get also buy Power Animal Report. So you can get both. But we're going to put a bundle together too. So you can do it now if you want, or you can just go on and find out what your Power Animal is.
Nice.
But it's kind of nice, and then you'll get that page that's in the book with the Power Animal Report. But if you want the whole book, you'd have to buy the book and then do the.
I got you now. Okay. So that's one way to find out what you're calling your theme power animal, the one you're born with.
Yes, the one you're born with, which usually gives you an idea. Like, you know, it's funny, like if I just pick one right now, let's say, for example, I pick pelican. I just happen to open up to. It's about sacrifice, expansion, and curiosity. And so the pelican gives me a quote here, and he says, sometimes life requires that you make a sacrifice for others. If so, do it willingly and without regret, as it can be a gesture of alchemy for the transformation of them and you. So maybe your life theme is about sacrificing and showing how that can be transformed, how you can transform others by making the ultimate sacrifice. You know, that can give you kind of a theme, you know, the pelican kind of gives us a theme. And then, of course, we go in further to the book and find out, you know, what's, you know, how does the pelican live? What's their powers? What's their awareness? And then you can kind of build kind of a life theme around it and say, oh, now I can look back in my life. I've been sacrificing a lot for others. Now I can see why that this was kind of my theme. And so that can be very helpful to kind of.
Yeah, it's a nice reframe.
Exactly. And then all of a sudden you go, oh, okay, that's why I've had this pelican going along this journey with me, actually teaching me that this is an important lesson.
Yeah. So do you recommend that folks, so let's say they find out their theme animal, but they are maybe struggling at this particular time in life. Do you recommend using this book in a divination sort of way, just like flipping open randomly to a page and seeing if that animal could be a helpful animal given what they're going through? Do you suggest that?
Actually, a table of the powers and the minerals in the back of the book. Go in the back and look and say, okay, you know, I want to work on my confidence, for example. I'm not feeling very confident. So you can go through and you can see that blue jay is all about confidence. And if you've ever seen a blue jay in the wild, it's a very confident bird. That's for sure. So you can, if you're able to go through and pluck out the powers and then work with those powers through the book.
I, for some reason, didn't even see this table in the back of the book.
Mm-hmm.
And so now I'm seeing that you have each animal broken down into their powers and the mineral, like you said. Yeah. So you could just sort of look up whatever you're struggling with. You can look up that and then see what animal can help you with that particular concern.
Right.
And what mineral.
Yeah. And then what mineral you could work with as well.
Very nice. In this process, did you discover that there were cultural themes with the animals, or did the meaning associated with an animal vary from culture to culture?
There were a lot of similarities. And you know, we've always known, I think, that these cultures were, you know, there was an intercultural dynamic in those times. I think what the animals proved to me is that that's true. So in other words, what you would see depicted on maybe some Mayan pottery would be very similar to what you'd see on a Hindu temple. It's the same depiction of that animal, and that was very interesting. I got a lot of my information from the cultural part from art. that was a great resource for me to go back and see, you know, what kind of, where these animals appeared in artwork. So it actually ended up being some research into the art world, ancient art, and that was kind of fun to see how they depicted animals in different ways. Snake is a very interesting animal because it's depicted very similarly. Where it got a little goofy, where snakes started to get crazy with art, was Christian art. And that was another thing that I found, was that there was a lot of very negative, maybe connotations or symbolism in Christianity towards animals. They used them as symbols of negativity. And when I kept running into that over and over, and I was like, wow, that's not cool. I didn't like that at all. Especially they use snake as, you know, like very negative.
I just released an interview with Hank Wesselman. Do you know of Hank?
Yes.
Yeah. In his interview, he was talking about how much damage Christianity had done to ancient cultures and languages.
Yeah, because as soon as I got out of the more, since I left the primitive art world and I got more into like the pottery and things like that, as soon as I got into the Christianity, the whole message of the animals changed. And I realized I was going into this kind of, you know, this severe duality of that and the images. But it was surprising to me to see the negative connotations towards the animals. It did harm a lot of animals because of negative connotations, because people felt that they needed to kill them to survive or to, you know, create some type of meaning.
In the little bit of time we have left, I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about what drew you to the shamanic path. I know you wrote a memoir about your experience, but I'm wondering if you could just give us the highlights.
Okay. I was living in El Salvador. I lived there for almost 28 years.
What brought you to El Salvador?
My husband was from there. And so he moved back. So I ended up going back with him. And he died. And I lived in a very remote place on a peninsula that stuck out in the middle of a volcanic lake. And a year after he died, I started to see and hear things. I could listen to Mayan spirits talking to me. And of course, I was a very, normal human being. I didn't listen to things. I was not spiritual at all. I didn't even know about 2012. Right? I knew from the, visiting the Mayan temples there and things like that, but there was really, I had no real deep interest. And then I started hearing things. Then one day I walked out of my house into the property and it rained just on me.
Huh.
What would happen would, the veil would drop and I would see myself in a Mayan village and then it would go away. So I realized there was another whole dimension happening next to me and I could get peeks into it and then it would disappear. And so that was pretty crazy. And then I would hear drumming. I would see smoke coming up, but then no one else could see it. Or my granddaughter, who's very psychic, she could hear the drumming when she was there. I went out all over the lake that I lived on trying to see who was drumming. I couldn't find anybody.
Huh.
I realized it was just me. And then the big event happened when it was my 52nd birthday. And the voices came into me and told me to go to the end of the peninsula at night. I went there, and at that moment, I was circled by probably, if I had to count them, maybe 12 or 13 Mayan spirits. I could see them perfectly. There was a fire, but there was not a fire. And they told me that night would be the beginning of my initiation. And so I laid down, as they told me, and a light beam crashed. And I was gone for 3 hours. I was unconscious. When I came back, I was paralyzed. And so it took me like an hour or so to get my feeling back. And at that moment, all I could see was sacred geometry. And then I could speak Mayan. I was speaking the language to my staff there at the house that they didn't understand, and they're from, you know, El Salvador, and then, you know, indigenous backgrounds, they didn't know what I was saying. But then I learned later that it was Mayan, a form of ancient Mayan. And there were four jaguars sitting there, and they said, "You're going to go through a shamanic initiation, and we're your teachers." And it started, and I realized that on your 52nd birthday, that's when the Gregorian calendar and the Mayan calendar intersect, and that's a very important day for the Mayans. It's a real, you know, jumping off point for them. And so I went through, I realized that I was living in the fourth and fifth dimension. I had only perception from that place. I was obviously thought to be completely out of my mind. And so I was put into a mental hospital and spent time there.
That was your decision to do that?
No, I was kind of forced to go through the process because of so much erratic behavior. And I had no real template to figure out why I could say these things.
I bet, yeah.
And then it ended up, after I finally got out of the mainstream mental health community, I went to Colombia, and I was told about a group of shamanic practitioners there, so I worked with them, and they put me back together. I was the worst case they'd ever seen.
Of
complete fragmentation.
Oh.
They said that most people, like 99% of the people, are like me and them, because you cannot get back to the third dimension. So I was stuck in the fourth and fifth, unable to really get there. And so because my perception was so different, I couldn't get back to just, like, for example, if I wanted to drive my car, I might be in a complete scene in a whole different place where I was driving my car. I can't remember how to go from A to Z because maybe I'm in Egypt or I'm somewhere else. And so the interdimensions were coming in. There was no way for me to see, where do I go? And then I could see spirits. I couldn't tell if they were alive or dead. They were so real. So I would be talking to people that I could see perfectly, but then they didn't, no one else could see them. And so I never knew what dimensional space I was in. I would have to go into my kitchen, like wave my hands at the staff to see if they could see me, because I didn't know, you know, what dimension I was on at a given time. And then there was a couple times where I had seven out of body experiences, and so people would find my body and think I was dead or unresponsive, and then I'd get called into the ER, and then I'd pop back in. So it was a mess.
Intense. Holy shit.
Yeah, it was a mess.
So how long did it take you to kind of feel like you could manage?
Well, the trip to Colombia was kind of pivotal because they knew what was going on. And they knew.
Good news, right?
They were very relieved that I had found them, because the problem with it was that since you're so interdimensional, you don't fear death because you're still alive in that other dimension. So it's very easy to kill yourself or do something that would kill you, because you don't know if you're alive or dead anyway. You know, so that whole perspective of life and death goes away. So that's why it's so dangerous for people. But I was very lucky I got to them. And I also had a woman, psychic medium, but she's also extremely capable in shamanic work, and she kind of took over the reins of what was happening. And then a shaman from, third generation shaman from Haiti, also kind of came in. And these two women saved my life.
Wow. And how long ago was all of this?
It happened 8 years ago.
Oh, so it hasn't been that long. That's when your husband died?
Died, and then that triggered all these kind of very strange.
Yeah, I was going to ask if you felt like the trauma around that.
Yeah, I think that was part of it. And then there was also a karmic, like a karmic obligation that I had. They had, I think, woken me up spiritually because I had to do the job. And it was the whole memoir. I don't want to give it away, but the whole memoir is how they completely destroyed me and then rebuilt me into this new me. But then I had a karmic commitment that I had made.
On the other side of that.
And I didn't know about it until this started. And then the whole process, these women helped me find out what it was that, you know, they wanted. And so they took me through the process of trying to get to that place. And it all culminated on December 21st, 2012.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. So, wow. Well, that's quite a story. Holy shit. But also it's a great tease for your book, your memoir.
Memoir has done very well. You know, memoirs are very hard to sell. Because,
yeah, they are.
You know, I remember I was with a group with Carolyn Mace, and Carolyn was talking to authors, and she said, okay, who's going to write about divorce? And you know, all these hands went up, and who's going to write about somebody dying? Who's going to, you know, all these different things? And of course, all these people were raising their hands. And so she says, if you're going to do any of those things, there's, you know, millions of books and millions of people who've gone through these experiences. You have to really have a unique experience if it's a memoir. Otherwise, you know, whatever. So my hand was still up at the end. And she said, what are you going to write about? I said, getting hit by a beam of light in the middle of a volcanic lake in El Salvador and getting held into the fourth and fifth dimension and living in mental hospitals and trying to get back to the third dimension. It's like, okay, that. And I thought, well, that's probably a good sign that maybe everything else is kind of the same old, you know, story.
Did you feel vulnerable revealing this experience that you had to the world?
Yes, that was a big, you know, I think a lot of writers have to go through that moment where they say, I'm going to be telling people some pretty crazy stuff here. And how is that going to be received? And, you know, part of my initiation by spirits was to completely destroy my ego. So,
yeah, it sounds like you went through the classic death and rebirth dismemberment experience. Yeah, so in a big way.
Yeah, in a big way. So if I had, I mean, it would have been kind of contrary to the experience if I would have not done it, because then I would have had ego involved and said, oh, well, I can't tell this story because I'm not going to believe it or whatever. So I always think about Eckhart Tolle, who has to write a book about ego and then has to promote himself. You know?
Yeah.
I asked my publicist the last time, I said, you're asking me to do something that I completely destroyed. I don't even care, you know, about these things. She said, yes, but you're still in, you know, this third dimensional world where you have to do these things. And I said, okay, I get it, but it was like writing a book about the destruction of ego, but then going out and promoting your book and yourself and telling everyone how wonderful you are. So there is kind of that slippery slope that sometimes you walk on.
I describe that death and rebirth experience of your ego is what's dying is who you think you are. Mm-hmm. And what is reborn is hopefully closer to who you really are. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I don't know if I agree with the traditions that say you need to get rid of your ego. I think it's more of a, like, you have to have a really healthy one. A healthy sense of who you are.
I think sometimes we use the term inaccurately because we say it's like all the bad things about
right.
And it really isn't. It's kind of that, it's that third chakra that's, you know, that's protecting you a lot of times, or that's, you know, playing the game, third dimension. And, you know, much needed for navigating.
Yeah. You're here, so we need it.
And so it is, but I think in my case, what it was when I described it that way, it was, you know, that there was so much, you know, I painted myself in such a way that I didn't even know who I was. And so it really was the full destruction of this creation.
Yeah.
And it was all this kind of importance that I'd given myself and believed that I was so capable in so many different things when I realized it was just an experience. There was no waiting. I wasn't like 5 stars or 4 stars.
Huh.
That's what ego does. Rates you. You're rating yourself and others all the time.
Right. Well, welcome back from all of that.
Yeah, it's nice to be back in the third. I went to the eye doctor shortly after happened because every time I see light, not so much during the day, but it's at nighttime. When I look up in the night sky, I see only triangles. I asked my eye doctor, I said, "Can you tell me why I see only triangles?" And of course, he's looking at me going, "There's nothing in the book about that." So,
oops.
I said, "Okay, I thought, well, at least I got to get rid of the medical explanation for it, but there wasn't one." So then I knew I was on solid spiritual ground. But that's kind of what I have left from it, is that I do, like street lights and things like that, I will see as everything's still triangles. And it's kind of nice. It's very soft now. It's very, it feels good. It's that memory of that place.
Gentle reminder.
Of where I was. And how it's,
yeah.
And now it's a remembering, although there was a lot of trauma around it.
Clearly, yeah.
There were some beautiful moments. And moments with animals. There's a lot of things that the spirits taught me how to bring animals to me. And I had, the cause and effect things where I would place intention in the field. And, for example, they said there's a white eagle or egret on the other side of the lake. Bring it to you. And I thought, wow, me? I can't do that. This was in the physical form, and they said, yes, you can do that. Because you're in the fourth, you can manipulate energy, you can do this. So I would be bringing this bird across the lake and landed right in front of me. And then I had a situation where I was with the two shamans here in Sedona, sitting on the creek, and they started using tuning forks and doing all this, and brought me a hawk that landed literally almost on my shoulder.
And wow.
So we started using, some of the powers, that we have. And so I think that was another probably reason why I wanted to delve deeper into the world of animals.
Well, on that note, that's a lovely conclusion to our conversation. I am really thankful that you came on the show and shared so much of yourself and also so much about your new book. I hope you sell a zillion copies.
Yeah, I think it's fun and it's helpful. It's an interesting approach to self-help through a different door. And I think it makes it interesting. It enriches us as humans to be, use the animal kingdom to support our self-help efforts. And because they want to help us, and they are kind of shining examples of how we can be better people.
Beautiful. How can folks find you?
They can look for me on my website, which is lorimorrison.com, LoriMorrison.com. And there's all the information if they want to get their power animal. You can just click on what's my power animal. And you can also buy the book there. The book's also on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. So just hop on the internet where we all go shopping nowadays.
Right. Yeah. And I'll also include a link to your website in the show notes so folks can easily access it. Yeah. Do you do social media at all?
Yes. I have a Facebook page. We have a Facebook page called The Shaman's Guide to Power Animals. And a lot of us are having a lot of fun over there sharing, if you see one, what does that mean? And I pop in and I, give them some information about that animal. We post gorgeous pictures of animals there. So it's a really nice page to like because you get some really cool stuff.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Lori, so much.
Thank you for inviting me and for listening to my story. Appreciate that.
It's a mighty powerful story. If you'd like to find out more about Lori or what power animal was present at the time of your birth, visit her website, lorimorrison.com. That's L-O-R-I morrison.com. Thank you for listening. Until next time.